My goodness, thank you, band, so very much. I'd be willing to bet that that song is going to be in your head for the next 3 days, and that's a good thing. Very good job. Yeah. Have I mentioned how weird this is? I think I have, but it is so strange. I was thinking a moment ago doing the meditation how much I miss you being here. I've said often that if any one of you weren't here, it'd be a different experience. Well, none of you are here, and it is a different experience. But I'm working on it. Beth says she's getting used to it. I'm not yet. But I am telling a joke to an empty house is kind of challenging, not getting the feedback. And if I don't see your faces, I'm not really sure whether the point's getting across or not. So those few of you who are here, band, I'm going to be depending on you now to give me that feedback to so I can know how things are going. And during meditation, it's very different, too, because I use the energy of the group in that meditation. I'll tell you sometime what all goes on during meditation that you don't know about. But we're going to be wrapping up our series on compassion today. And originally, we planned to have two other people up here, two lay people from the congregation, to share their ideas about heroes of compassion. Now, obviously, that's not happening, so I want to continue in that thought and share with you about heroes of compassion. Now, when we use that phrase, there are a number of people that come to mind, historical figures that come to mind. One of them, of course, is St. Francis of Assisi, who served the poor and created the order whose sole purpose was to serving the poor and caring for people. And then, of course, there's, I wrote down a whole list of them. There's Mother Teresa, which comes to mind, who did the same thing. She had a great compassion for the poor and formed a whole movement within the Catholic Church, within her order, to serve the poor and those who needed help. And then, of course, Gandhi, who did a very similar thing, and Martin Luther King Jr., who took a stand as well. And, of course, the Dalai Lama. And one thing I discovered in doing my research is that a number of years ago, the Dalai Lama put together a conference on compassion. And at that conference, he and others created a list of people in modern times who they felt were heroes of compassion. And what I found online were 10. I'm not going to do all 10 of them, but I picked out 4 of those to share with you to make an impression about a hero and of compassion and what that really means. So here are some people who made significant impact in the realm of compassion that you probably have never heard of before. You've heard of these others, but not these. So let's take a look at them. First of all is Beatrice Webb. In the early 20th century, it became popular for writers and would-be social reformers like Jack London and George Orwell to spend some time living down and out on the streets of East London and to experience the realities of poverty among the homeless, beggars, and unemployed. The forgotten figure who started this tradition was the socialist thinker Beatrice Webb. Webb was born in 1858 into a family of well-off businessmen and politicians. But in 1887, as part of her research into urban poverty, she stepped out of her comfortable life, dressed up in ragged clothes, and went to work in an East London textile factory. The account of her adventure, pages from a work girl's diary, caused a sensation. It was unheard of for a member of a respectable society, especially a woman, to have firsthand experience of life among the destitute. My own investigations into the chronic poverty of our great cities opened my eyes to the worker's side of the story, she wrote in her autobiography. Her compassion immersion inspired her to campaign for improved factory conditions and to support the cooperative and trade union movements. She later became a leading figure in the Socialist Fabian Society and co-founded the London School of Economics. A second hero of compassion is John Howard Griffin. In 1959, the white Texas-born Griffin decided to get a taste of what reality was really like for an African-American man living in the segregated Deep South. He dyed his skin black, and with a combination of sun lamps and pigment darkening medication, he spent 6 weeks traveling and working in Louisiana, Mississippi, Georgia, and South Carolina. Nobody ever suspected what he was doing. It was an eye-opening experience. Working as a shoeshine boy in New Orleans, he was struck by how white people stared straight through him without acknowledging his presence. He experienced the everyday indignities of segregation, such as walking miles to find a place to use the toilet, and was subject not just to racist verbal abuse, but to the threat of physical violence. He wrote about his experiences in the monthly magazine Sepia, which had sponsored his experiment, and later in his best-selling book, Black Like Me. Today, it might seem condescending or unethical for a white man to speak on behalf of other racial groups, but at the time, most African-American civil rights activists saw his work as necessary because it was so hard to get their own voices heard. Griffin gained widespread attention for the cause of racial equality and worked later with Martin Luther King Jr. At the heart of his book is a resounding message about the value of compassion. If only we could put ourselves in the shoes of others to see how we would react, then we might become aware of the injustices of discrimination and the tragic inhumanity of every kind of prejudice. The third one, Gunther Wallraff. In 1983, the German investigative journalist Gunther Wallraff embarked on what may be the most extreme compassion immersion of the 20th century when he spent 2 years as a Turkish immigrant worker. Wearing dark sun contact lenses, a black hairpiece, and having perfected a German accent, he threw himself into a succession of back-breaking jobs, such as unblocking toilets on building sites that were ankle-deep in urine, and shoveling coke dust at a steel factory without a protective mask, which left him with lifelong chronic bronchitis. What struck him most, he later wrote, was not the 19th century working conditions, but the humiliation of being treated as a second-class citizen by native Germans. His book about the apartheid-like conditions experienced by foreign workers in Germany, Lowest of the Low, sold more than 2 million copies in 30 languages. It led to a criminal investigation of firms using illegal labor and resulted in improved protection for contract workers in several German states. Wallraff's work demonstrates the unique power of experiential empathy for uncovering social inequality, and he also inspired others to do similar work in other countries. And last of all, Patricia Moore. Today, one of the leading exponents of compassion in the United States is a product designer, Patricia Moore, whose specialty is using compassion to cross the generational gulf. Her best-known experiment was in the late 1970s when she was 26 years old. She dressed up as an 85-year-old woman to discover what life was like as an elder person. She put on makeup that made her look old, wore fogged-up glasses so she couldn't see properly, wrapped her limbs and hands with splints and bandages to simulate arthritis, and wore uneven shoes so she hobbled when she walked. For 3 years, she visited North American cities in this guise, trying to walk up and down subway stairs, open department store doors, and use can openers with her bound hands. The result? Moore took product design in a completely new direction. Based on her experiences, she invented new products for use by elders, such as those thick rubber-handled potato peelers and other utensils now found in almost every kitchen, which can easily be used by people with arthritic hands. She went on to become an influential campaigner for the rights of senior citizens, and she was instrumental in getting the Americans with Disabilities Act enacted as law. Her latest project is designing rehab centers for U.S. war vets with missing limbs or brain injuries so they can relearn to live independently, doing all that they need to do. Her whole approach, she says, is driven by compassion and understanding that one size does not fit all. Now, these folks had significant impacts on the world, and in certain circles their names are known, but let's bring this down a little bit closer to home. There are people doing things now who wouldn't be considered extraordinary, yet they are significant. In a movement across social media, educators at all levels are reaching out to families during this time of the pandemic to offer expertise and assistance in their sudden new responsibilities to homeschooling their children. And a lot of people are going through that now. Parents are having to deal with having the kids at home and suddenly being responsible for their education. And there are many people who are offering help to do that. In Tennessee, a son worried about the well-being of his mother and her friends in a retirement community, brought his guitar and sat outside the window serenading the residents there. And some of the people just watched, and some came to the windows or the balconies and sang along with him and enjoyed that very much. A brother and sister aged 9 and 6 in Columbus, Ohio, were going through their community dancing and singing for the neighbors who were there. And my impression of that was, I thought, this is like a pandemic caroling session for them. So at that young age, they're reaching out to people in that way. An Irwin, Pennsylvania window washing company recently advertised free grocery and pickup for seniors on a billboard outside its headquarters, and it's been getting nonstop calls for that. And then in Nevada, a college student, Jade Powell, organized Shopping Angels to collect food, prescriptions, and necessary supplies for the elderly, so they wouldn't have to be out and be exposed to the possible virus. That idea has spread all across the country. And I could go on. There are thousands of these cases of people doing things. But let's bring it a little bit closer to home now. What about you and me? What is it that we can do to experience and to share and to perpetuate this compassion in our world? 4 things I'd like to share with you that would be good for us to give thought to. 1 is find some good news. Now, if you listen to the regular news, read the newspapers, talk to people, what you usually hear is how many more people have now gotten the virus, how many more people have died, how much worse it's going to get, and how people aren't prepared and there's chaos everywhere. I mean, you can get yourself really down if you read all that. Now, I'm not advocating that we stick our head in the sand. Oh, and by the way, do you realize that an ostrich does not stick his head in the sand? Yeah, that's to get that squared away. What happened is that some English travelers to Africa saw an ostrich and put his head down like that, and they just assumed he was sticking it in a hole in the ground. But an ostrich, when it's threatened, will often put its head down so it's less visible. I mean, you know, there's this 4-foot-long neck sticking up there. And these English tourists thought that the ostrich was sticking his head in the sand, and that's where that saying got started. So even that doesn't happen, we can metaphorically stick our head in the sand. That's not what I'm advocating at all. Yes, let us be prudent. Let us abide by the pandemic protocols, but let us not do it with a sense of fear. Let us do it with a sense of wisdom and a sense of peace and a sense of power. And I found, if you will go to my best friend Google and type in good news and push the button, you'll find entry after entry after entry of good news. There are newspapers out there completely dedicated to good news. Like HuffPost is one who covers everything, but they have a section called good news. New York Times has a good news section. So I'd say instead of focusing all this bad news, let us be aware of what's going on around us so that we can act appropriately. But let us also realize there's still good news going on in our world. I got some great advice from an old preacher one time. We were talking about things, and he said, what we need to do is to keep our glance on the world and our gaze on God. Our glance on the world and our gaze on God. And I think that is great advice for us now in the middle of what we're going through with this pandemic. Let us keep our glance on the world and the statistics and what we need to do to keep ourselves safe. But let us keep our gaze on that deep truth that is within us, that peace that is within us, that being that is within us, and let that be the root, the source of what we are going through each day. A second thing that we can do is to do our inner work. Wherever you are, no matter what, you can always pray. That's one thing that is always with us. We can use our meditation time. We can use our imagination, that we can, instead of seeing the whole world with everybody in the world infected by the virus, let us visualize the world healed. We know now that in China, there are more people healed than have the virus right now, and that's beginning to move in a positive direction. Let us see the whole world coming to that place where the pandemic has passed and we're back to health and wholeness, but with a different notion and appreciation of what life really is. So we can use our prayer time. We can use our meditation time. We can use our imagining ability to be able to see that truth playing out. And then in the outer, what is it that we can do? In our modern times now, telecommunication is so easy. As a matter of fact, a few minutes ago, Bev and I had prayer with the chaplain, but there's no chaplain here because we did it by phone. Many of you may not know that every Sunday morning, usually at 10 minutes till or whenever we can get Bev back in my office back here, But at approximately 10 till, one of the active chaplains comes in and shares a prayer with us. And this morning, Catherine called in by phone. And we had our prayer time nevertheless, even though she wasn't here. So you can reach out using your phone. Matter of fact, if I had thought about it soon enough, I would have had the band to have done that old song, Reach Out and Touch Somebody's Hand. Who did it, James? First. Diana Ross was the first one who did it. I think Michael Jackson did it too. Excuse me. But it's a beautiful song. It says, reach out and touch somebody's hand. And I think there was one of the telecommunication companies that had that as a tagline, reach out and touch. So we can use phone to do that. And all the social media platforms, I am not up on all of those things, but many of you are. And there's so many ways that we can get in touch with each other. Bev and I have been very deliberate about contacting our elderly members, those who haven't been to church for a while, or those that might be particularly threatened. Are there some who are even experiencing illness, not the virus, but some other illness in the midst of the virus, which is even more scary? And if you think about somebody, those of you who are sitting at home wondering what to do, think about somebody that you haven't seen at church for a while and give them a call and say, by the way, I'm just thinking about you, and here we are. And spread that love around among all those that are here, because it's possible. It's no effort. It doesn't cost you anything. Do you remember when you had to pay for long-distance phone calls? And now all you do is pick up your cell phone, just dial, and there it is. So no matter where somebody is, you can stay in touch with them. You can touch them. You can care about them. You can express that love with them, to them. And the last thing I would share with you that I think is really important for us to do is a practice I would share that I do for myself. My constant mantra, no matter what's going on around me, is here I am. Part of that is because being a minister, you never know what's going to happen. When I go to bed at night, I never know what the next day is going to bring. Somebody may call and say, I'm at the hospital, come see me. Somebody says, my relative passed away and we need to do a funeral. Somebody might say, we want to get married. All kinds of things are going on, so we never really know. And my constant mantra is, here I am. Whatever comes along, I'm ready for it, bring it on. So I would encourage you to play with that a little bit. And I always caution people, be careful if you say yes to Spirit, and be sure you fasten your seatbelt before then. Because if you say, here I am, Spirit says, oh, there you are. So I challenge you, in the midst of this time when sometimes we wonder what we're going to be doing, try that for yourself. Here I am. Spirit, open a door and I will walk through it. Here I am. Spirit, give me an opportunity to care for someone and I will care for them. Here I am. Create a situation where I can serve in some way and I will serve. Here I am. No matter what comes up, here I am. And be open to sharing compassion with those around you and with the world. We talked about micro-compassion and macro-compassion, caring for yourself and caring for others. And in the midst of that, here I am. So wherever you are, would you say that with me, either silently or out loud, together? Here I am. And again, here I am. And once again, here I am. God bless you, my friends.